Good morning. A special welcome to Gethin's friends and relations, grandmas and aunties, and lots of people who've come to celebrate the birth of this little person who's very special to us too. This morning, we're continuing in our studies in John's Gospel on some of the I Am sayings of Jesus. And today, we've got to chapter 10, I Am the Gate. When you think of gates, I wonder what you think about. Do you think about rather grand gates, like maybe you'd find at Buckingham Palace, or maybe somebody who wants to make a statement? Or do you think about gates that say, keep out, go away, you're not wanted here? Gates where maybe you need a password or an electronic gizmo or something to get in. Is that better, David? I got not used to this one. And maybe you actually need to give your name into a little grill so that people know who you are. Or maybe you think of a sort of rather more homely gate, a sort of wooden affair that maybe some of us have got going into our gardens. Gates can be indoors too, to keep children safe from falling down the stairs. But basically, gates welcome you through. Maybe it's into a garden, a beautiful garden. Maybe it's out into the big wide world to see more. We have a really ordinary gate around the side of our house. And it says, it's usually open, and it says, come through, we want to welcome you into our garden to come and be with us. But sometimes it's kept closed, and that's when we have children in the garden, and then it's bolted on the outside to stop them escaping. So gates say many things, don't they? They say welcome, they say come through, they say safety, and sometimes they can say keep out. You're not welcome here. So what was Jesus meaning about his being the gate of the sheep? Often our chapter divisions in the Bible maybe get in the way of seeing Bible stories in context, and I think this might have happened here. Jesus has just healed a man who was blind from birth. You may remember that Jesus made mud and put it on his eyes and told him to go and wash in the pool of Siloam. And off he went, and he washed, and he received his sight for the first time. Up to that point, he'd never seen people, faces, colour, the forms of trees and flowers. It had all been by feel, by using his hearing. He is amazed at this healing, and he goes back and tells everybody what's happened. And they take him to the religious leaders, who are supposed to be the ones who will just verify his healing. But they get into a bit of an argument about Jesus healing, Sabbath day, that's not on. And the man, in exasperation, finally says, all I know is that once I was blind, and now I see. And they are so annoyed with him that they throw him out. Whether that was the synagogue, the temple, we don't know, but he would have been excluded from the temple anyway because of his disability. And now he's got his sight back. Maybe that was one of the things he was looking forward to being part of. But he gets thrown out again. He then is found by Jesus. And Jesus says to him, do you believe in the Son of Man? And the man hasn't seen Jesus up to this point, and he says, I don't know who he is. But maybe he's thinking, I've heard that voice before, and Jesus says, I am speaking to you, I'm he. And he worships. He instantly realizes this is the one who has healed him, and he worships and follows Jesus. Jesus then goes on to talk about the people who are blind in this story are not the blind man, but actually the religious leaders, the Pharisees, as they're called in this passage, who should be showing people the way, but who are not, and who actually are stopping them from knowing Jesus himself. So why does Jesus talk about sheep? Well, I just wonder whether he's standing on the temple steps where he often taught, and he looks over at the Mount of Olives across the Kidron Valley, and there he sees a shepherd bringing his sheep in for the night. Now, that's just my conjecture, but I can just visualize that happening. And he thinks that's a perfect illustration for what I'm trying to say, that the man who heard my voice and followed me has come in through the gate into the people of God, into the sheepfold. But those who would keep people away are like the thieves and the robbers who climb over the wall and don't have the sheep's best interest at heart. They are the ones who are the outsiders, not the people who come with disability or difficulties or from a poor place. Maybe he's also thinking, this is not how it should be, because in the Old Testament, all the way through, the picture of sheep and shepherds is used extensively for God as the chief shepherd and the leaders as people who are to shepherd the sheep, to be the under-shepherds, to have the care of the sheep in very much on their heart. And time and time again, the people fail to do this, the leaders fail to do this. And this is happening again in Jesus' day, as they fail to recognize who he is, the one come from God. There's a promise in Ezekiel 34 where God says, I'll be their shepherd, and I'll also give one of the line of David who will be shepherd to them and who will care for the sheep with love and faithfulness. And this we find in Jesus. Now, when we think of sheep in this country, we think of a scene a bit like this one of rolling fields, of enclosed big flocks kept in by barbed wire, by fences, by stone walls. The shepherd maybe visits them once a day to keep a bit of an eye on them, but he's often in his truck or on his quad bike. And it's only really when it comes to lambing or to dipping or to shearing times that the shepherd maybe actually handles his sheep. But it wasn't like that at all. It isn't like that at all out in many Middle Eastern countries where the flocks are small and maybe just one or two shepherds, or maybe a family with a slightly bigger flock where they're all involved very much in the hands-on daily care of their flock. Sheep are kept primarily for their milk and their wool, and only less in a lesser extent for their meat out there. During the day, they're out looking for pasture, and then when night comes, they're brought into a place of safety. Now, if it's during the winter and there's quite a lot of grass around, then it maybe is near the village, and there'll be a communal sheepfold, maybe a stone structure. That's shared by several flocks who all mix in together. If it's the summertime and they've had to go further afield to find pasture, you might remember that Joseph was sent to find his brothers who'd gone off with the flocks, and they'd gone 60 miles up to Shechem and then even further on to Dothan, another 15 miles further away, to find enough pasturage for their flocks. So they couldn't come back to Beersheba where they were based. And there they'd have to make do. And at night, there would be maybe a fold that had been used for generations of shepherds that had a stone base. Maybe they would have to use the thorn bushes that were all around and cut them down and make an enclosure. But it would have just one entrance. And it would be through that one entrance that the sheep would come. And as they came into the fold each evening, the shepherd would take a good look at each one. He'd maybe run his hands over it, see if there are any injuries, see if they'd picked up any ticks during the day. He'd notice the one who was limping or the one who seemed to be lagging behind, because he knew each one. Maybe he had his names for them, his affectionate names. And the inspection over, when they were safely in the fold, either he himself or somebody delegated by him, maybe it was a rota, maybe they had rotas of shepherds to keep watch for the night, but whoever was on duty would actually lie across the doorway of the fold and become the door. And it was over his body that anyone had to come in and any sheep had to go out. He was there right in the middle of it all. in that intimate relationship with his sheep. He would know if danger threatened, if there was a wild animal around outside, and he'd get up and deal with it. Maybe there were a couple of them. Maybe they did it together. In the morning, the shepherds would come and would call their sheep. You can imagine lots of sheep all mixed up in the sheepfold. And in the morning, shepherd one turns up early and he calls his sheep. And half the sheep sort of separate themselves from the others and go trotting off with their shepherd. Shepherd two turns up and a few more go. Shepherd three, and then shepherd four maybe, who's had a lie-in. He's the one who comes last and takes the rest of them off to pasture for the day. Maybe go off in totally different directions. But they lead their sheep. They don't herd them. They lead them, and they know them individually by name. Around 15 years ago, we had a family holiday in North Wales. And one day we went for a walk. I can't remember where it was to, but it involved going through a field that had sheep in, which isn't difficult if you're in North Wales in the summer. And as we went through the field, the sheep scattered, all apart from one who followed us, and particularly followed our daughter Penny, and trotted along behind, and just wouldn't leave us. And we stopped to look at the view, and he nuzzled up against Penny, and obviously wanted affection, which she gave. So we then went on with our walk, and when we came back at the end of the day, we said to the local people, we met a very strange sheep this morning, one of this year's lambs. It just wouldn't leave us alone. And they said, ah, that was the one that was hand-reared. That was the one that had an intimate relationship with a human being. And there must have been something about Penny that reminded them, reminded the sheep of the one who had brought them up, who'd nurtured them, who'd cared for them as a little lamb. And there was a bond there that wasn't broken, even though they'd been out with the rest of the flock for some time. And Jesus, as he's talking back in there in Jerusalem, he's saying that that blind man is the one who now, through his relationship with Jesus, is the true member of God's flock. And those who are failing to know Jesus are the ones who are on the outside. So what about us? I wonder who we're following today. There are lots of conflicting voices that are clamoring for our attention in our world, aren't there? Social media, we gather, actually organises the information we receive so that we receive it from the people who think the same as we do. So we think we're getting the viewpoints that there are out there, and actually we're only getting a very narrow band of what's happening and what people are thinking. I think we've maybe seen some of that this week with some of the outcry against some of the aid agencies where people have withdrawn giving because of a few who've undoubtedly acted the wrong ways and need to be held to account. But people are almost saying, why are we giving all this money away? And in stopping giving, they're actually depriving some of the most needy people in the world. It's not an agency you're depriving, it's people on the ground who are, many of them, living at very much subsistence level in war-torn places without water and education and health. So please don't be tempted to stop supporting international aid. Tom and Vanessa are bringing Geth in this morning because they want to say publicly that they're part of the flock of God and that they've come through Jesus into the sheepfold. And it's in that relationship that they want to bring up their son, and they ask us as family, friends, congregation here to help them in doing that. And we can all together be part of Gethin's life and his future. I wonder how we're responding to Jesus' voice in our lives. Is he calling us to follow him? Maybe it's something we've never thought of particularly before. And how do we know Jesus' voice anyway? What is it about it that we can recognize? Well, it's the voice that speaks for the disabled, for the outcast, for the poor and the weak to become his friends. Not exclusively those, but including those. And so much of our modern life excludes and doesn't include. And following Jesus leads us to nourishing places that are good for our growth and away from the rocks and precipices of hate and of despair and of things that would harm us. So if we hear that little voice saying, come this way, is it a way that leads to life or is it a way that leads to division and enmity? He wants to include other people who don't yet belong to his flock. Nobody is excluded. His is the voice of self-sacrifice and of giving, of faithfulness and of love. And he gives and he promises to give to all who come in through him a quality of life that we don't find anywhere else. A life that brings joy and purpose and hope for the future, not only for ourselves but for others. A life that overflows and satisfies and continues forever. I don't know if any of you are following on the internet 40 Acts of Generosity, which is a stewardship campaign initiative that goes through Lent, where instead of giving up, you're asked to give out, and it gives some ideas each day for ways in which you can be generous. And yesterday, it was about listening to Jesus' voice in the small things of life. And a lass gave her testimony of last year's time, Lent, when she was on a journey in the car on the M25 going back to where she lived from at the end of a weekend. And she realised she'd need petrol. She was probably student age, not much money, but she went into a motorway service station and got £15, because you don't buy more than that on a motorway service station, do you, because of the cost. And ahead of her in the queue to pay was a lady who was obviously having difficulties with paying. Maybe she'd lost her purse or her card wasn't where she thought it was. And the cashier was being very polite, but saying, we do need this money. And this lass felt God prompting her, go and pay for her as well. And she was having that internal conversation that we probably all recognise of, Lord, but I haven't got anything in my bank account. And she might have filled the tank up for all I know. It might be far more money than I can afford. But no, God was prompting her. And so she said, I'll pay for this lady as well. And found their combined bill was only £30, which was well within her means. She listened to that prompt. I think my challenge for this week is to let's listen to Jesus speaking to us in those little ways, those ways that bless and help and are generous to others. Maybe the kind word in the supermarket, the acknowledging the person who seems to be depressed or down, doing something for another. So are we following Jesus both out into our world and in to the safety of the sheepfold? And I think that looks different for different people. For some it will be into a quiet space and out to activity. Maybe it's in to rest and out to work. Maybe it's that balance of doing and being that so many of us need to get right. Maybe that's something else we can be thinking about this week. So there's some challenges for you. Jesus said, I'm the gate, I'm the way, the only way. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He'll come in and go out and find pasture. I've come that they may have life and have it to the full. Amen.